This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
Listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of The Province. Here are your hosts, Paul Chapman and E. Spencer Kite.
Welcome, everybody, to the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio, a special live everybody in studio edition as the UFC comes to town this week here in Vancouver. Joined, as always, by my punch drunk predictions partner in crime, Patrick Shiviklinski. But this is also a momentous event, the triumphant return of the man whose name is ahead of mine in the your hosts talk, Paul Chapman. Chappy, you're back.
Nice to be back. Nice to talk UFC. I have like 730 approximately takes, which you disagree with. The first one, of course, is Daniel Cormier is boring and we need a real champion at light heavy. But I know we can get to that later. So why don't you lead us down the path?
Yeah, we can definitely do an all Chapman hot take show at some point, but we should at least start locally. UFC on Fox 21, Maya versus Condit in town this weekend. It's Thursday as we're recording this. I just came in. I was in yesterday, did some interviews, did a little bit of the media rounds. Chappie, you live here. Patrick, you represent the island. So we've got most of the lower mainland covered. Am I crazy that it feels like there is almost no buzz for this show? Patrick, what's it like in your circles?
Yeah, man, I can only speak to sort of what's going on the island, but I've heard pretty much radio silence in terms of this event. The buzz certainly hasn't been, you know, building, and, you know, it's been pretty quiet on all fronts, which is kind of an unfortunate thing. I mean, if you look at the card top to bottom, it's a pretty darn good card, especially that main card. When you look at the quality of fights that are on this thing, I think that this is certainly one of the better cards Vancouver has had in the last little while, especially coming off UFC 174. A lot of fans weren't too pleased with that, but I think that this is a card that is a sneaky good card, and one of those that I think we're going to be talking about next week. Like, there were some great moments.
Yeah, and that's kind of the challenge with this, is that you look at it on paper, you look at the main card, there are four very good fights. Damian Maia, Carlos Condit is an important fight at welterweight. Anthony Pettis looking to press the reset button with his featherweight debut. Paige VanZant, who is now, regardless of her record, has become one of the more recognizable names in the UFC because of her stint on Dancing with the Stars. And yet it feels like you tell people, I'm in town for the UFC, or you ask somebody about it and they stare at you blankly. It feels like this fight card could be happening anywhere else in the world and it's in our backyard. How do they fix that, Chappie? Like, what does the UFC need to do to generate more buzz both locally and Canada-wide?
Deep breath, because I'm going to go for a while here. So, Spencer, one of the things that I know, I laugh when people will sort of criticize media coverage of UFC, and Spencer gets all worked up, and people will always reference, well, Botchford doesn't have to, or, you know, we'll like, they'll reference having to appeal to the casual fan, and Spencer goes, Botchford doesn't have to appeal to the casual fan with hockey. For the most part, hockey's free, so people can choose whether or not to like it. UFC still wants people to invest $80. It's the difference between watching on TV and getting into the arena. However, I think that works against the UFC here. Number one, if it was a pay-per-view and you either pay for a ticket or you pay for the event, I think that's one thing. So I was really disheartened this week when I saw basically discounted tickets on a Ticketmaster email, which suggested that there are not very many tickets sold for this. So I thought, oh, here we go again. But let's start with the time of year. Okay, so the time of year, These are like peak 2 weeks holiday time for everyone in Vancouver. We know that our heads are down and school schedules start and everyone comes back from work vacation. These weeks are death in terms of any event. And that's why the PNE is looking to move that and some weather issues to earlier in July when more people are around. The town is basically, you know, we like to think Vancouver's a big cosmopolitan city. It's kind of like a small town that's shuttered up for vacation at the moment. So I think that's a tough sell. Number two, you guys talk about it being a good card, and it is if you follow UFC, but it doesn't have the name. And if you want to turn people's heads and make them pay money, as great as Carlos Condit is, after essentially 2 years off for injury and an all-timer fight against Robbie Lawler, he's not a guy who's been out there. So this is the problem I think the UFC has in all its small markets right now, Spencer, is we would talk about this a lot. If you go back two, three years when it looked like UFC was really in the ascendancy, and that's what you're dealing with mainstream media when they always come back as, oh, UFC's on the downslide. It had a blip. You know, you had Anderson Silva, GSP, John Jones, even Kane at the time looked like he was going to be an all-worlder, or prior to him, Brock Lesnar. Who's that name now? Is it Connor, who already, despite last weekend, it had, or Ronda Rousey, another name? So those guys are gone. So who are the names where the so-called casual fan or someone who might consider watching to get hooked on the sport is going to see Fighter X on Global doing their little breakfast show shot and go, okay, I'm interested in this. I'm going to watch it. I don't think they have it. Again, as good as Carlos Condit is, you know it, I know it, Patrick knows it, but a free card. I don't think you can put a free card in a smaller market. You're going to have to do it at another time of year, and you're going to need a big pay-per-view if you want this to be a legitimate market. What I don't want to hear is them trot out after this, like, oh, we've tried three times, Vancouver won't support it.
Yeah, that's going to be the really interesting part, is this is our fourth show. We've had three pay-per-views before this. The last one, as Patrick referenced, UFC 174 here a couple of years ago with Demetrius Johnson headlining, Rory McDonald beating Tyron Woodley in the co-main event. There was an exodus before the main event was over. It just didn't work. It was in July, in June, just like the previous two events. And it didn't work. It wasn't the right card. It wasn't the right combination of things. Patrick, has my love of parody and my enjoyment of the fact that anybody can be a champion and that there is that surprise factor going into every fight sort of made things even more challenging for the UFC, because as Paul says, there aren't those signature stars for people to point to, and we haven't spent as much time getting invested in and becoming familiar with the Amanda Nunes's of the world. And I mean, even though he's been around for a decade, no one expected Michael Bisping to win that fight. And so when he goes out and beats Luke Rockhold, instead of it being a crowning achievement, it becomes a, how the hell is Michael Bisping the middleweight champion?
Yeah. I mean, overall, I mean, just 2016 has been such a weird year in terms of champions switching. We've seen so much of it this year in the women's bantamweight division. Obviously, we saw it go from Holly to Miesha Tate and now to Amanda Nunes. It's hard to keep up, you know, with the latest champions when they're always switching. It's hard to stay invested in someone and really get to know someone as a champion and really start to like them and build a kind of appreciation for them if they're always switching all the time. And, you know, I think it also adds, you know, a part of the another issue that I see is, you know, guys like Tyron Woodley calling out these big money fights. I mean, I really don't understand. You know, I understand that he feels that he's paid his dues. He feels that he needs that big money fight. He's doing what's best for him. He wants that money for his family. He wants to, you know, get in there and make as much money as possible. The window is so, you know, small here in MMA. But at the same time, I don't like it, you know, when these guys, you know, coming off a win against Robbie Lawler, now he suddenly wants to fight Nick Diaz and George St. Pierre. Where does
look Stephen Thompson in the face and says, I really appreciate your polite invitation to fight, but you just hang out for a minute. I want to get this guy that hasn't won a fight in 5 years and is just coming off suspension. Or the George St. Pierre one, I'm down with. I understand that completely. He retired as the he went on sabbatical as the welterweight champion, because George will not ever say that he retired. He just took a break. I get that one. You want to prove you're the best. You beat the best. I'm down with that 100%. You threw a wrench in it by calling out Nick Diaz, who hasn't fought in a year and a half and hasn't won a fight since he beat BJ Penn, which tells you how long ago that was.
Yeah, I mean, I just find it kind of strange that, you know, all of a sudden it shifted from, you know, going for that title shot. I mean, even in Robbie Lawler's time as champion, you know, that he was fighting every number one contender out there, every toughest son of a gun that was in there, Carlos Condit, Rory McDonald twice. You know, he's been in there with the best, and I understand where Tyron Woodley's coming from. I really do. He wants that money fight. I just think it's a little ridiculous that he's calling out Nick Diaz and trying to get it done so fast.
Does it hamper the UFC trying to build guys and trying to build these champions that have just moved into that position, like an Eddie Alvarez, when they're looking at Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz and running that back right away and keeping them together rather than using these guys that have had those moments to sort of bring up the other people that we should be and we're going to need to get familiar with and pay attention to?
Well, it's chicken and egg, right? They're never going to get those other guys up if they don't do something and they focus. And in fact, Spence, there's been a lot of talk about that. The UFC was burned by putting so much in the Conor and Ronda basket. And then look what happened last year with them both shock losses. But the issue for me is, and I get, and we'll get to Rory McDonald later, I get that guys have to look after themselves. But why is the champion calling the shots? You work for UFC, you fight who they tell you to fight. And the funny thing for me is, and again, this goes back to the casual fan versus a real fan. I'm sorry, I want to see Tyron Woodley fight a guy who hasn't lost in 8 fights and whose right. style is, like, that to me is a way yep. more compelling reason to put down $70 or $80, whatever it is, than watching George St. Pierre come back and you know, sort of roll around and minimize and not try and get knocked out for 4 rounds.
Well, and George St. Pierre will be a draw regardless of who he's fighting. Whenever absolutely. That happens, people are tuning in, so it doesn't need to be. For Tyron Woodley, it makes sense because George St. Pierre brings the eyes to him, but George St. Pierre against anybody brings eyes. So Tyron Woodley can fight, as you're saying, Stephen Thompson, and showcase that guy that has put in the work. And I wrote about this on the site earlier this month. On the way up, Tyron Woodley is 100%. I mean, he sat out. He was out for 18 months. Didn't have a fight because of the Johnny Hendricks thing and different circumstances. And all the way up, as we're talking about these guys, including Stephen Thompson, who went out and starched Johnny Hendricks back in February, that made us all go, maybe Wonderboy deserves the shot next. Tyron put up his hands and said, nope, I'm in line. I got next. You're not skipping over me. But now that he's the champion, I mean, respect for saying it right to Wonderboy on the satellite feed on the Fox desk. But he's the first things out of his mouth, as Patrick said, are not yet. I want somebody else. So,
no, we've talked about this before. I mean, put them both on the same fight, GSP against yep. someone, and then Woodley and Thompson, and then the winners fight for the title. And well, maybe not if GSP loses, but you know right. what I mean. There's huge money in that. But again, you can't rationalize how the UFC pays their fighters. But with you mentioning Johnny Hendricks, ties in nicely to the Vancouver card. We got Pettis on this card, and this is as we talk about these names, I guess it's just the nature of the sport. This is a huge problem for the UFC. Holly Holm beats Ronda Rousey, and then she has a shock loss to Miesha Tate. But then you're like, okay, Holly Holm's still marketable. Then she goes out and loses. Showtime Pettis, one of the biggest names in the sport when he's champion. He loses. Everyone was shocked at how he lost. Then he loses. And then he loses. And now what are you left with? Johnny Hendricks, same thing. Everyone thinks he beats GSP. He doesn't. But right. then he fights Lawler, has 2 all-time fights. What the hell has happened, Johnny Hendricks? I'd even put Rory McDonald in that category. All-timer against Robbie Lawler. Man, this guy is great. He's got 1 fight left. And then he's looked so disappointing against Wonderboy. So I'm looking at it's obviously the nature of the sport. You get these fighters who, once they have a loss, it's like, okay, the luster might be off the name, but the luster's off their game. And that's the problem, is you can't build these names back up. I don't know why.
Yeah. Does the UFC almost need to go, and I can't believe I'm even asking this question, but do they need to go more of a boxing route and have some of these fights where, one of the things that the UFC has built itself upon that we have all really loved about the organization is, more so than boxing, you get the big fight that you want. You often get number one versus number two. And that's great, but it also cannibalizes your divisions. It also puts you in a position, as you're saying, where guys end up with back-to-back losses or three straight setbacks, and then there's nothing you can do with them. Is it almost beneficial for the UFC to start sort of giving these guys get-right fights when they're coming off big losses to kind of manage those names a little bit more, and instead of putting Holly Holm in a very dangerous fight with Valentina Shevchenko, who the three of us in this room know, but not many other people do, do you give her something where she can go out, you showcase that she's the former champion, you bring her back, you get her back in the win column and build that way. So you sort of preserve people. Patrick, is that something they need to consider going forward so we don't continue in this same situation of guys catching losses?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a business perspective, it makes a ton of sense. If you want people to stay invested in fighters that, you know, keep losing, it's a tall order. It doesn't matter who they're losing to at the end of the day. People are going to see the records and see LLL, right? So I think that definitely having some of these talented fighters to have get right fights, I think that's a great route to go for someone like, you know, Holly Holm. Definitely it'd be great because she still has that huge name. People still remember her from the Ronda Rousey thing.
She will forever be able to live off that fight.
Exactly. And it honestly didn't happen all that long ago. It was just over a year ago.
So, not even a year ago.
Yeah, not even a year. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy that she's kind of, you know, out of, you know, that kind of contention talk at the moment right now, two losses. But I think that it would make a lot of sense to go that route to have get right fights for guys who aren't, are coming off of those losses that have, you know, tarnished their record a little bit. But, you know, in the case of Anthony Pettis, it's, as Paul brought up, that's an interesting case because, you know, he's coming off three losses in a row and he's fighting a pretty substantial, you know, opponent in Charles Oliveira at featherweight. They're doing him no freebies. So this is kind of the opposite of what we're talking about. You know, right. You'd think three fights, three losses for a guy like Anthony Pettis, extremely marketable guy, good looking dude. He says all the right things. He has that swagger about him, but you know, you're giving him a fight with Charles Oliveira in his featherweight debut. I don't know if that's the best route to go. It's a real tough fight. Obviously, you have to fight elite talents to stay, you know, relevant, but they could have given him a little
chance to get a good win in his debut against a top 10 guy, but it's also a chance to catch a fourth straight loss, which I can't think of anybody that you've been able to promote coming out of that. Before we pivot off sort of some of these challenges, Chappie mentioned Rory McDonald, obviously reports out that he is set to sign with Bellator. They put an offer on the table. The UFC has declined to match. We expect official news later in the week. We always talk about it, and I've asked Tom Wright about this, head of UFC Canada, myriad times, and he always says, no, I don't think it's the case, but do we need a Canadian star? Are we better off having maybe not a George St. Pierre, but a Rory McDonald, a Canadian fighter that this country can attach itself to in order to kind of maintain that interest and maintain that success going forward?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that it certainly doesn't hurt. I mean, Rory McDonald, obviously, you know, he's not necessarily the guy in the media who's going to be talking a lot, who's going to be, you know, calling guys out or doing this or that. But he is a damn entertaining fighter. And that's, you know, been kind of his calling card for as long as I can remember. He's that guy who always shows up and more times than not puts on a great fight. So I think that, you know, with a Canadian star like that, you know, Rory kind of represents, you know, the kind of humble Canadian in a lot of ways, you know, the kind of polite, you know, kind of, oh, you know,
not going to say anything very controversial.
Exactly. I'll take any fight. I'll take anything that's given to me. I think it does, you know, hurt the UFC a little bit to not have Rory in the fold. He's a guy who's had so many, you know, classic matches against Robbie Lawler at UFC 189. That's one of the greatest fights I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, this is a loss for them, and I think that it'll be interesting to see how it plays out down the line for Canadian fans. Yeah.
Chappie, do we need a guy like that? Or can we? I mean, we look at so many other sports where we don't necessarily have native Canadians as the stars of those teams. Henrik and Daniel, not from Canada, huge support in this market. Do we need that, though, with such an individual sport like the UFC?
The Canadian angle works if they're a real title contender, right, or a star. So GSP is going to work. GSP is going to work anywhere,
right,
but in Canada, people are going to go see GSP. Even if people don't follow UFC, when the Lou Marsh Award or the CP Athlete of the Year comes up, he was in the conversation, right? Right. So, you know, you may not know the Canadian auto racer that is, you know, ranked 12th in F1, but you know Jacques Villeneuve. So
right.
I think that's what it comes down to. Sometimes you get forced hometown names, but as you point out with Henrik and Daniel, you know, the Canucks have always... It might be a good story when you bring back a Cliff Ronning, but if you've got a guy, you know, who's just a third or fourth liner, the fans would rather see a guy who's from Sweden who can play on the first right. line. So right. Number one, it's about production. So I don't know that it sells tickets when you're not a star. I think if Rory fights here, it's a great example of, people will get behind the hometown guy. But if you're the third or the second fight on the main card, but you just happen to be born in Canada, I just think it's forcing it. I think you need to cultivate good names. And if they're a legitimate title contender, yeah, it helps that they're Canadian and sure, place them in a Canadian market. But I think people will buy tickets to this event based on how good the fighters are, not where they're born.
It's the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. E. Spencer Kite with Patrick Shivik-Linsky and the returning Paul Chapman, who is loaded with hot takes. We'll get to this card now itself. We've talked about it. It is a very good card. These are mostly important fights on the main card. Jim Miller and Joe Lauzon, not necessarily a battle of contenders, but a rematch of a classic from a few years ago. Two guys that you can count on 100% to set the tone for this event. As Brian Stann mentioned when we spoke to him earlier in the week, off the top, Carlos Condit and Damian Maia. Is Damian Maia, I mean, we're speaking about, you know, contenders and sort of stars that you need. Is Damian Maia kind of the perfect example of the struggle the UFC has? A guy that's on a 5-fight winning streak, an amazing grappler, and Chappie, you're smirking because I think you're going to say that he's boring and not a lot of fun to watch, which I understand. And I asked him about earlier this week when we ran a piece in the paper and online. His response, I get it. I'm never going to please anybody. It's great. I'm not going to please everybody. It's great life advice overall, not just for an MMA fighter. But is that part of the struggle, is that you have a guy like Damian Maia that could potentially go out and make an all-action fighter like Carlos Condit look very, very mortal on Saturday and still not really energize the crowd to see him fight for the title?
Well, yeah. Look, for me, I like Damian Maia. And as much as I will whine and pout about guys like Daniel Cormier and Damian Maia, my issue is I like a well-rounded fighter because I recognize it's not boxing. It's right. not kickboxing. It's MMA. So, you know, being able to grapple and have a ground game makes a huge difference. But, you know, I look at how ordinary Rory McDonald made Damian Maia look, and that was a fairly boring fight. But the fact was, that was a fight where Rory was aggressive and he was throwing punches and Maia wanted no part of it. So Rory had good takedown defense. Maia couldn't get close to him. He was a non-entity. So that's where this fight is intriguing to me. You know, I wonder the other way around. Can he, an all-out action fighter like Carlos Condit, you know, if his takedown defense is there, Maia has no plan B. And while he's been on 5 straight fights, when he's fought a similar fighter, I don't know. And it can make for a good fight because
right.
if Maia goes for that takedown and can't get it, you know, he's just going to have to sit there and try and dodge punches. And I look at Carlos Condit, and there's a guy who, you know, I think he could be a superstar name if obviously if he hadn't been on that layoff. There's a lot of people who still think he should be the guy who holds the belt.
Well, and that was where I was going to go is, I mean, Damian Maia has landed. I saw the stat coming in this morning. Damian Maia has landed 12 significant strikes in his last three fights combined. I mean, it speaks to his excellence on the mat.
Brandon Prust has better stats.
I rewatched the Matt Brown fight from UFC 198, and it's a masterclass in execution and positional control. And he spent most of the time looking like a backpack on Matt Brown, who is a tough out. But Patrick, as Chappie mentions, like, can this go the other way? Is it almost important for the UFC to go the other way? Because a lot of us, myself included, think Carlos Condit won the title in January and should be walking around with the UFC belt over his shoulder. Spoke to his coach, Brandon Six Gun Gibson. That story's in the province today on Thursday and online as well. And he said the same thing. We came out of that fight and I looked at Carlos and said, you're the world champion in our eyes. I'm with you 100%. We shouldn't be backing down from anybody. Let's take on this big challenge. Is Carlos Condit, and is the fact that this is now a 5-round main event as opposed to a 3-round fight that it was supposed to be last weekend, beneficial for Carlos Condit himself, but maybe also for the UFC in that it gives the natural born killer 2 more rounds to work with to potentially get this victory?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think in the past, what we've seen with Carlos Condit, he's a bit of a, you know, slow starter. He's kind of notorious for that. That first round, a little bit of the second round is a little bit of a feeling out process. But once he gets going in those later rounds, boy, does he get going. So I think that it is 100% beneficial that he's going to have 2 more rounds to work with. He shines in those 5 fight, you know, title bouts and main events. You know, he's a guy that, you know, you just feel gutted for him sometimes because he's always kind of the bridesmaid, you know, never the bride, always the bridesmaid. He's always doing the right things. He's competitive. He's so skilled, so talented.
And yet he's 2-4 in his last 6 fights and all people and one of those victories, all people want to say is that he was running away from Nick Diaz.
Exactly. I mean, and that's a part of the dilemma that you face with a guy like that. You know, his record says one thing, but his skills, when you see him in person, say another thing. So I think that right now with Carlos Condit, all they can do is, you know, hope that those 2 rounds will give him an opportunity to do what he does best. And I think that, you know, that's probably the best that the UFC can hope for right now.
Co-main event, as we've touched on a little bit already, Anthony Showtime Pettis making his featherweight debut on a 3-fight losing streak. Just a crazy turn of events from the start of 2015 where he was on the Wheaties box. I know that doesn't mean as much in 2015 or 2016 as it did back in the 80s when that was kind of the crowning achievement for an athlete was to be on the cover of that iconic cereal box. But as we've mentioned, a tough fight against Charles Oliveira. Is this the start of a resurgence for him? Can he get it back? Or have we just seen Anthony Pettis kind of hit that plateau? The competition has caught up to him. And yeah, he's going to continue to be a contender, but he's not going to maybe be that dynamic talent and that cornerstone that the UFC thought he was going to be just 18 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Anthony Pettis ahead of this fight. The story is up on the province on the website, so make sure to check that out. But, you know, I spoke to Anthony before this fight, and, you know, I talked about that. I asked him about sort of the last 3 fights and sort of what has, you know, maybe kind of gone wrong for him in those fights. And we talked about the tentativeness that a lot of, you know, analysts have talked about, him not being able to pull the trigger in situations where in the past we'd see him showtime a dude and roundhouse kick, you know, do something crazy. But in the last few fights, you know, it seems that he's had a bit of, you know, tentativeness and he's a little hesitant. And with every fight that he's had since, you know, losing the belt to Dos Anjos, the Eddie Alvarez fight, and then the Edson Barboza fight, it just seems like it got even progressively a little worse. He got a little bit slower and a little bit slower and kind of, you know, a little hesitant to get in there and mix it up with his opponent. That being said, you know, he also told me he isn't fighting bums out here, which
very true,
which I, you know, certainly agree with. Eddie Alvarez is the current lightweight champion. Dos Anjos, former lightweight champion, and Barboza's right in the mix as a top contender. So he hasn't, you know, been getting easy matchups, but hey, that's, you know, life if you're a elite talent. So I think this move down to featherweight is the right move for Anthony Pettis. It is an opportunity for a fresh start for him. At the same time, though, it's not an easy matchup. I really do think, you know, a lot of people are just kind of assuming that it's Anthony Pettis. He's going to come down to featherweight and start destroying fools. I don't think that necessarily happens as easily as people think. This is a tough challenge for him. We'll see how the weight cut looks on him. He was originally supposed to be, you know, a featherweight fighting Jose Aldo at UFC 163, right, which a lot of people forgot about, before he got that opportunity to fight Benson Henderson at 164 when won the title. But he was telling me, you know, he wants to be that, he wanted to be that first two divisional champion that Conor's trying to be now. And, that kind of hasn't gone his way. So now he's got to, you know, regroup and see what happens next for him. I think featherweight is the right move. Whether it's the right move long term is, I think, going to be the big question for me.
Chappie, is this one of those examples, sort of to tie in our first segment, is this one of those examples of here's a star, here's a guy that you could have built around and that you seemed poised and ready to build around? Like, I remember UFC 185, the build up to that, they did the welcome to the show launch event, which tied in his nickname quite nicely. He was front and center of that poster. Dos Anjos was on one shoulder. Carla Esparza and Joanna Jędrzejczyk were kind of in the background. They roll into Dallas and Joanna Jędrzejczyk just blows up. That's where she took off. That's where she told us, don't worry about learning my last name. You could call me Joanna Champion. Went out and proved it. Anthony Pettis gets crushed and hasn't been able to rebound since. Is this one of those cases where two fights ago, this guy needed an opportunity to go out and look great, and now he's stuck trying to rebuild just absolutely fractured confidence?
Well, is that what it is? Is it confidence? Because, I mean, his game just seems to have gone. Because whether he believes in it, whether it's coaching, whether there's a medical issue, whether he got found out, I don't know what it is. I know confidence is certainly part of it, but when you go up and down the champions in both those weight classes, I'm not sure that, you know, is Jose Aldo and Conor McGregor, is that a better route for him to get the belt than, you know, staying right where he was and going up? I mean, and the one thing at lightweight, you know, the guy I love, even though he hasn't fought in what seems like 5 years, is Khabib. I just think, you know, that guy's a destroyer. And I believe he's the most, going back to before he got hurt. And of course, he has to find that form. I think he's the guy in that division. Having said that, there's a number of guys in both divisions. So this is a must win for me for Anthony Pettis, because if he doesn't, I don't know where he goes. Like, I don't, and we've talked about this, to put it through the lens again of someone like Rory McDonald, who, when you see the reported figures of what some of these guys make, even if they're on the co-main, why would you put your body through right this as a guy? I mean, I don't know what else he would do. And I'm not saying he should retire. I'm just saying, if you can't, there was a guy there who was not just champion pedigree. You're absolutely right. This is a guy who was beating people easily while he had the belt. If he can't win a fight here, then I don't know what the future is for Anthony Pettis. For me, we throw around in other sports terms like must win. Right. Like, the Canucks will face a must win game in November that means nothing. This is a must win fight for Anthony Pettis.
Yeah. As I said earlier, I can't think of anybody that has really been able to maintain their position in the spotlight as a draw, as a guy that we're really interested in on a four fight losing streak. I think Dan Hardy had four straight losses going into what ended up being his last UFC fight of now. And that was down the main card. That was on a fight night event against Chris Lytle, I believe in like Milwaukee or Minnesota or somewhere kind of random, for a guy that had fought for the UFC title and had been kind of one of the stars and almost seemed ready to replace Michael Bisping in the UK. Crazy how that turned out. But I agree with you. Absolute must win for Anthony Pettis. It's what makes this fight compelling to me and to most of us. But again, to casual fans, how do you sell a guy on three straight losses? It becomes a little bit challenging. Women's strawweight fight. Paige VanZant returning after both a very good performance on Dancing with the Stars, finished as runner-up with her partner Mark Ballas, But her last time in the octagon, she was on the business end of a serious beating from Rose Namajunas. She is another one of those fighters that has gotten a huge push, that has become one of the fighters the UFC looked at and said, we're all in. We're going with Paige. Last December was the Paige and Sage show. I'm shaking my head. It just felt so forced. And then, of course, Sage doesn't look great. Paige gets mauled and everybody goes, now what? In a weird way, is this almost a must-win for her as well because of all of the attention she's gotten, even though she's 22 and we can still see that there's a world of upside?
I would say if you put that investment in Dancing with the Stars and all this mainstream attention, yeah, if people, this is her first fight, it's on free TV. People who watch her on Dancing with the Stars who don't watch the sport, they'll be like, okay, let's check it out. Yeah. I'm not sure about this, but I really liked her on that show.
Remember that fighter girl she's fighting this weekend. It's true.
I mean, it's not just her looks, right? It's her personality. She really says and does the right things. And so I think she's very engaging. And there's no doubt she has talent. So it's not a must-win for her career, but I would say at this, with the state of the UFC, if you are trying to grow the game, capture more fans, it's a must-win fight from their perspective for her, or at least put on a good showing, right? I mean, this is the thing, if you go back to Pettis, it's one thing to lose, even to lose close fights. You know, we talked about Condit taking a loss, still look like as he's called, a natural-born killer. I think as long as Paige, you want Paige VanZant to win, but as long as she looks good, I think that's the big thing. She can't go out there and get overwhelmed and look like she's just completely overmatched.
Well, and you look at the fight with Rose Namajunas, and there are, as strange as this may sound to some, in a fight where she was dominated for five rounds and left bloodied, there are positive takeaways. You saw a lot of toughness. You saw a lot of tenacity from a young fighter who is still just learning the game. But Patrick, does that kind of only last for one fight? And as Chappie's saying, does she need to go out and have a strong performance here to sort of reinforce the investment and keep people that are tuning in after seeing her on Dancing with the Stars interested in this young, talented, bright fighter on the rise?
Yeah, I think 100%. I mean, as Paul pointed out, this is her first big opportunity on free TV, Fox. A lot of eyes, a lot of people who are going to be like you guys were mentioning, you know, casually kind of tuning in off coming off of Dancing with the Stars. This is a fight that I think she needs to at least look, you know, experienced in and look good in. That being said, though, I don't know if it's crucial for her to have a win. Obviously, coming off, you know, a lot of mainstream eyes, you definitely want to go out and have that win. But as we saw in the Rose Namajunas fight, her stock, you know, even went up in a loss, which was kind of wild. She showed a lot of grit. She showed a ton of toughness. And like we said, you know, she's still super young in this sport, still learning. She's with a great camp at Team Alpha Male. I think people will kind of, you know, forgive the fact if she comes in here, has a good fight, but, you know, comes out with a loss. But if she comes in and gets knocked out in the first round by Beck Rawlings, people are not going to be as receptive to that as, you know, maybe a three-round fight where she looks, you know, really good, but maybe got outpointed by a more active fighter.
It's the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. E. Spencer Kite, Patrick Shevik-Linsky, and Paul Chapman. Before we wrap up, we've got about 5-10 minutes left. I would be remiss having him on the show for the first time in 9 or 10 months to not just let Chappie have a couple minutes to talk about his favorite fighter, Daniel Cormier, who seems just poised to either fight Anthony Johnson or maybe sit on the sidelines, Dana White is saying earlier this week, as Rumble maybe fights John Jones. If you are making that call, if we let you be Joe Silva, what do you do with your boy DC?
Well, okay, let's clear something up here. And I have been kind of harsh on him on social media. One of the reasons is, and I do appreciate his style, and I was a huge John Jones fan. I'm still not sure that I am.
He told me yesterday that he threw out his John Jones shirts.
I said I almost did. I said when the positive test came back before last, that was it. They were ready to go. I haven't worn them since before the car accident, but I was like, maybe. I just can't stand the holier-than-thou attitude of DC. He comes off as a complete douchebag to me. He's so hypercritical of Jones being a phony and this and that. And if you really trace the roots of that rivalry back, it's all because Jones was supposedly not respectful enough to him and his wrestling background when they first met. So talk about a guy with his chip on his shoulder. But he's accused Jones of some things which are completely fair game. But I see the same things in Daniel Cormier. To me, he comes off as a total phony now. He was in a no-win situation in that last fight. I didn't like it. I didn't like the way he approached the fight, but I get it. Again, it's self-preservation. Right. He's on this huge card. He's coming in against a huge fan favorite, Anderson Silva. But to me, he didn't even try to put on a show. And yes, of course, he is skilled enough as a wrestler to lean on a guy for five rounds. He just didn't want to... Again, from a strategy point of view, completely understandable. But I just don't like a lot of the stuff that comes out of his mouth. I think he's petty. I think he's cheap. I think taking a shot at John Jones' brother when he tested positive for PEDs as well, Art Jones with the Colts, you know, I thought that was below the line. Now we are seeing that this, you know, who knows what happened with John Jones. It looks like he's going to be reinstated and put in there. And the UFC desperately needs him for all of his being a knucklehead. Look, he's said the right things. And if he, everything that he talks about, if he really is training the way he is, and you know Brandon Gibson who works with him, and I have no idea what he's been doing since his positive test, if this guy actually puts in the work, I just want to see him in the ring. So what do you do? I think you have to give Rumble a shot with Cormier and give Jones another fight, and Jones fights the winner. When Jones was champion, he went through the murderer's row. He fought everyone. I don't think it's fair to Rumble to say, oh, now you get a scary John Jones and now you lose your shot.
Right.
Or even to Jones and say, you've gone through all this. Look, Daniel Cormier needs to fight the next guy up, as we've talked about all along. And I don't know for the life of me why these champions get to call the shots. You're the UFC. You're selling pay-per-views. You need to build names. You are now fighting this guy because he's the next best available. So, you know, I get the business part of it. I think it would be great business. Again, we talked about it before. Jones and Gustafson as the co-main, and Rumble and DC winners fight after that down the road. And maybe losers fight to see who gets back in. I just think it's a great four-person tournament. That's what I'd like to see. And plus, I think Rumble's earned it.
Yeah, well, and that's the challenging part, right? Is that the UFC has oftentimes sort of, depending on who the challenger is, has said there's one more hurdle. There's always that one more hurdle. We may see it with Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who has won far than enough fight, more than enough fights to earn a welterweight title shot. I agree with you that Anthony Johnson has done enough. 13-second knockout over Glover Teixeira, who hadn't been stopped in more than a decade.
Well, let's not forget as well that there was a moment in the first round against DC where I thought DC was done. Like, he was literally one punch away from losing
that
fight.
I was sitting cage side for that, and Anthony Johnson hit that first big shot. I leaned over to UFC PR exec Dave Schaller and said, this thing's going to be done in 40 seconds. Like, it looked like that. So that, to me, is a credit to Daniel Cormier. It gives us a little bit of a reminder of how tough this dude is. I agree with you on the style versus excitement versus, you know, the risk reward of that. Anderson Silva's it's a tough matchup on that, those conditions. But I understand where you come from. It becomes the entertainment versus self-preservation and sport side of it. Patrick, you heard Chappie's idea. He and I discussed it yesterday. DC Rumble, provided Alex Gustafson gets through Jan Blachowicz next week in Hamburg. Do you run that back finally 3 years later and set up a little four-man tournament at light heavyweight?
I love that idea. I you know what? I didn't even think of putting Gustafson Jones as a co-main event or something to that effect on that card. But I love that idea, you know, that was a great suggestion by Paul.
No, it was Spencer's idea, not mine. I was stealing it.
Oh, okay. All credit to Spencer, but
we're all on the same team.
Yeah, I love that idea, and I think that it makes a lot of sense. One thing I do want to say about Anthony Rumble Johnson, I love the guy, but I don't like this humble Rumble thing. When you're knocking dudes out as viciously as Rumble Johnson does, as, you know, powerful as he is, I don't want to see him after the fight go, hey, DC, want to run it back again? Guys, I don't know. Be nice to him.
All respect to you. You're a great champion.
No. I want to see him, you know, call DC out and say, hey, you're about to get this fist in your mouth.
see what happened to him. I'm going to come and do it to you.
So I love Anthony Rumble Johnson, and I think that running that fight back is a fantastic idea. I would love to see Gustafson Jones run it back as well. I think it's a great four-man tournament, and I think that would be a really awesome pay-per-view card, and a lot of people would tune in for that one.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens with first Alex Gustafson next weekend in Hamburg, Germany, as I mentioned. We'll have to see what happens with the John Jones situation. You know, he's come out, released an Instagram that has probably been deleted saying we've gotten some good news. We've seen USADA hand out 6-month suspensions when they figure out supplement issues and things like that. We're hearing talk of maybe, same as Anderson Silva, not a Thai sex juice, but some kind of actual erectile deficiency drug, which is just amazing to me, but whatever, that's what happens. So it could be anywhere from 6 months to a year. I don't think it's going to be the 2 years. Chappie, we will leave on this. Does your boy John Jones need to come back and have kind of a transcendent performance in one of those spots where we just go, oh, right, this is why we thought he was the greatest of all time?
Yeah, he does. I mean, it's funny the criticism he took against OSP. You know, and again, I know that was short notice. You know, you look at how guys maybe go in and couch their performance, but he wins all 5 rounds easily, yep. Like dominant in all 5 rounds. But people were all over him because he wasn't spinning elbows.
Because he looked rusty.
Yeah, flying knees. Yeah, and everything else. To me, John Jones, he's kind of like, you know, when Sugar Ray Leonard fought Roberto Duran and was like, I'm going to beat you at your game, and got off his game. We haven't seen John Jones in a fight really be John Jones for probably 3 years. John Jones really on his way up. It was impossible to take down, good striking, smart striking, but get you on the ground and one of the most brutal ground and pound games in the business. He hasn't used that for a long time. He wanted to out wrestle DC. He wanted to out dirty box right. Glover. He has sort of gone along that's your strength. I'm going to prove I'm better than you. Right. I want to see John Jones just go out and be John Jones and get back to what he does best, which is a little bit of everything. Having said that, ring rust, age catches up to everyone. And I think this is why the UFC needs John Jones to be the guy. If you look at where he is in his career, he's not going to get any more chances to slip up. And once he gets back in the ring, he's got to build towards something. I mean, we were looking at this, Spencer, when he came back, people were talking about, oh, he's got to move up to heavyweight. Well, he's now stepped in it again, and he's going to have to prove right. himself at light heavyweight. I mean, heavyweight, that's something you and I can spend 2 hours talking about.
I'm sure we will.
But that's it. Another division where you're just scratching your head as to what's really going to happen. You think you have a new guy and he's gone. So maybe the table is set for him there as well. I think it would be too big a leap considering he doesn't show great power at light heavy. But guy's amazing athlete. He's said all the right things. It seems like his coaches have got him doing the right things. I just want to see him spend another year, 2 years in the ring doing what he does best.
Yeah, it's a lot to wait and see with John Jones. Greg Jackson said it best several years ago. The only guy that's going to stop John Jones is John Jones. Hopefully he is done getting in his own way. Hopefully things get resolved, regardless of what you think of him outside of the cage personality-wise. You can't deny that he is a transcendent talent in the octagon. Hopefully he comes back and we get more opportunities to discuss him, the light heavyweight division, Daniel Cormier, all of these things with Paul Chapman, who doesn't go another 9 months not being on the show. It's been great to have you back. Patrick and I are off to open workouts and media sessions today here in Vancouver. It has been the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. For Paul Chapman, Patrick Shivik-Linsky, I am E. Spencer Kite. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the fights this weekend. And as always, be good to one another.
You've been listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of the province. Read the Keyboard Kimura blog on theprovince.com, follow them on Twitter @KeyboardKimura, or visit them on Facebook at facebook.com/KeyboardKimura.